The FDIC getting back to black.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Starting today, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation will be getting some money back. The FDIC's Deposit Insurance Fund, which insures our bank deposits, is billions in the red after 140 bank failures this year. But that's changing, as Mitchell Hartman reports.
The FDIC's insurance fund protects deposits up to $250,000, and it's paid for by premiums charged to banks. Today, those premiums come due, not just for a quarter, but for the next 3 years in one lump sum. Eric Oja is a bank analyst at Standard & Poor's.
They need the cash simply because the fund has diminished.
Andrew Gray of the FDIC says it's worse than that.
As of September 30th, the fund stood at negative $8.2 billion.
Gray says this three-year prepayment will raise $45 billion, putting the fund back in the black. Some banks have complained paying all at once will hurt their ability to lend. Eric Oja says that's not likely. The bigger problem is finding good loan risks in this poor economy. Plus, he says, banks got a break when times were good.
For almost 10 years, the industry paid very little or nothing in premium and got a free ride.
Small banks can request an exemption, though doing so could signal their finances aren't strong enough to survive the coming year. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
GMAC is on track to get $3.5 billion in bailout money. That's on top of the $12.5 billion it's already gotten. GMAC used to be the highly profitable financing arm for General Motors. It's separate now, but still provides financing for GM and Chrysler dealerships. If it goes under, the worry is those dealerships would not be able to bring new cars onto their lots. Seems a little early for a New Year's hangover, but the markets are in a sour mood this morning. Tokyo's Nikkei index slipped 0.8%. London's FTSE is off 0.3%. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped just a bit, closing at 10,545. That's still very nearly a high for the year. Philadelphia just announced it can't afford to host the annual New Year's Day Mummers Parade this year. So, to keep the century-old tradition alive, the Mummers are going to pay to march. Gregory Warner has more.
The convention hall where the Mummers do their dry run is so large I have to be driven around by cart. The driver is Scott Brown.
Each organization is given 60-foot wide space in which they can build. They have 2 days to bring in their props. As you can see, a prop can be up to 62 foot high.
Mummers like Brown contribute hundreds or thousands of dollars for their props and costumes. But last year, the city said it couldn't afford the extra police and trash collectors for the New Year's event. As Mummers director Jim Julia explains,
you know, we're closing pools and we're closing libraries. Okay, that's a legitimate argument. The difference is this. There's costumers that are in business simply because of the Mummers. Home Depot is out of plywood.
That's not true. But Jim says the parade does bring in millions of dollars more than it costs the city. Supporters launched a fundraising campaign called Save the Mummers. State politicians, business owners, and Kevin Bacon got involved. The Mummers have agreed to compensate the city $150,000 for their march on Friday. And the upshot is, after all this attention, the old Mummers no longer feel taken for granted.
The Mummers were always there on January 1st. And then last year, all of a sudden, somebody said there may not be a parade. And that's when people, we won the PR war big time.
Now, anyone for the pools and libraries? In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing and online surveys. ConstantContact.com.
Ever since the housing market collapsed, taking the rest of our economy with it, all signs have been on that sector for signs of recovery. And those signs have been mixed at best. On the bright side, the success of the so-called new urbanist developments. From St. Louis Public Radio, Adam Allington explains.
What's a U.S. homebuyer to do? You're nervous about buying in a city with its old infrastructure, messy politics, and complex social issues, but you're not that jazzed about the idea of cul-de-sac living either. New urbanism proposes a third option: compact, walkable communities with a mix of houses, apartments, and stores. Tim Bussey is the architect behind one of the hottest new urbanist projects in the Midwest, Newtown at St. Charles, where homes are still being built at a brisk pace.
It has continued to perform very well through the recession.
2,200 people live in Newtown, about 30 miles west of St. Louis. Think California bungalows and French Quarter chic, throw in a general store and a few shops. This small house, still just studs and drywall, is precisely what Bussey claims many homebuyers want. Opportunities to downsize.
I have never in my career designed a house that's 600 square foot, completely customized to an owner's specifications. And so this represents, part of the future of development.
Peter Calthorpe is an urban planner often associated with the new urbanism movement. He says over the past several decades, developers have adopted a one-size-fits-all approach. All houses in a subdivision were the same size, big, and that's a problem.
We tend to think of this housing boom and bust as a problem around credit and financing. The reality, I think, is we've been building too much of the wrong stuff for too long.
Calthorpe says there's a way to avoid selling people homes they can't afford. Give consumers more choice on smaller lots with better access to public transit. But others accuse the new urbanists of simply designing better sprawl on the edge of cities.
You have to wonder, why are we building on the fringe like that?
John Burse is an architect with Mackie Mitchell.
Should it be built here, or should we not be concentrating our energies on making our inner city more livable and solving these tough issues that we have?
New urbanist projects account for just a tiny fraction of homes being built. Even Newtown's success wasn't enough to save its developer from bankruptcy in October, as sales of the company's other properties plunged 70%. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And finally, New York's iconic Tavern on the Green restaurant will be closing its doors tomorrow. Just a couple years ago, the upscale Central Park Eatery was the second highest grossing restaurant in the country. Now the bankrupt tavern is auctioning off everything, including its name, which is worth an estimated $19 million. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.